The December 13th, 2013 meeting of the Chicago State University Board of Trustees is hereby called to order. Ms. Phillips, would you please call the roll?
Trustee Leak? Trustee Young?
Here.
Trustee Zolar?
Present.
Trustee Curtin?
Here.
Trustee Reyna?
Here.
A quorum exists for the business of the board. Ms. Phillips, will you verify that the notice for this meeting has been given pursuant to the requirements of the Open Meetings Act?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The meeting notice requirement has been met. Notices were posted 48 hours before this meeting in the Cook Administration, Student Union, and Academic Library buildings.
Our first order of business is to approve the minutes from our September 20th, 2013 board meeting. Are there any comments or corrections in regards to the minutes of the September 20th, 2013 board meeting? Hearing no comments or corrections, is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
I second.
Trustee Leak? Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zolar?
Yes.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Reyna?
Yes.
I think at this time it's appropriate for me to welcome two new members to the Board of Trustees. Trustee Nikki Zolar came on board shortly after our last meeting. We welcome her warmly. And Trustee Reyna is the student trustee. We welcome him. So I'd like to welcome our two new board members.
Thank you.
We'd like to announce the board meeting dates for 2014. They will be March 7th, May 9th, June 27th, September 19th, and December 12th. We'll now have our president's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and all members of the Board of Trustees. As always, it is my pleasure to present to you some highlights of where we are as a university. I would also like to formally welcome our new board member, Ms. Nikki Zolar, and thank her for committing her time and energy to helping Chicago State achieve its goals. I'd also like to take this time to welcome Iz, our student trustee member. Iz has come to us from as an undergraduate student, and he's now performing as a graduate student and working with Dr. Arnold, doing some very important research within the community and engaging the community. I want to thank you for both, one, working with the community, and two, for serving on the Board of Trustees. The end of the year is always a time for reflection, as well as a time to look forward and plan for the future. With that in mind, I would like to review a few key items that I think are worth mentioning. Before I do that, there's going to be a presentation today of our core mission of what we are about at Chicago State University, that is students, in terms of changing young men and young ladies and giving them the opportunity to become the best of what they can be. And I say young men, being very mindful of the fact that we have a traditional student body, and our average student is 31 years of age. This graduation, our oldest we will have a student that is graduating that is 81 years of age. So I look forward to the presentation today of our students. We have to date handed out over $700,000 in merit-based scholarships to over 950 students. These students have an average GPA of 3.48 and are studying all across broad range of quality academic programs. The scholarships range in amounts based on need, with the average scholarship being given at just over $1,000. These scholarships are helping more and more students afford college and are helping CSU attract and retain students moving forward. I want to say that this is probably the largest amount of scholarships we've given out in the university. Someone said, and over the last three decades, and we're going back to the records right now, and we have never, to anyone's memory, given out in any records, given out this many scholarships. It is our hope that this coming spring semester, we will be able to do twice that amount. I want to acknowledge and thank Senator Emil Jones for conceiving the concept of getting the money from the state through the gambling process. But I also want to thank Speaker Madigan and President Cullerton for their willingness to take a concept and execute it and make it a reality for our students. You know, so we had three individuals who we really need to thank for these dollars. Increasing enrollment continues to be a top priority for Chicago State, and we are actively working to increase the number of quality students enrolled. Since we last met, our enrollment management department spearheaded a successful open house in November. Over 400 prospective students had a chance to visit our campus on a beautiful fall day. Our enrollment management team is also working to expand our outreach efforts in partnership with area high schools, with a particular emphasis on building quality relationships with schools outside of CSU's traditional footprint. Increased January applicants from 840 in 2013 to more than 1,370 in 2014. This is a 63% increase. And our staff in our admissions office are hard at work, and our staff in the financial aid office are hard at work to ensure that the FAFSA applications are all ready when spring semester starts. Infrastructure and technology improvements. We continue to move forward with the updating of our switchgear, which, as you are all aware, is a vital project for the future of our campus. We've added more than 700 new computers on campus within the last 6 months, ensuring that our students will have access to the most up-to-date technology. We have invested in new wireless technology, which has more than tripled the wireless online speed on campus. And our IT team is working to double the speed again by the end of the year. Again, this will provide our students and our faculty with the technology they need to get the most out of their educational experience. We're working to streamline our campus email system and are in development of a CSU mobile application that will enhance our campus-wide communication. We continue to move forward in our West Side campus development. We have a number of stakeholders on the West Side in the development. We will have a more detailed status report in this coming at the last part of this academic year. Academic achievements. We are redefining the Honors College program. Two of our undergrad biology students, Mr. Aaron Thompson and Ms. Clara Pham, were recently honored at a national biology conference in Chicago with an award for best presentation. CSU continues to place a strong emphasis on bringing more minorities into STEM programs. Professor Valerie Goss recently brought several students to the National Organization for the Professional Advancement of Black Chemists and Chemical Engineers, an organization in which she plays a leading role. Our Dean of the College of Pharmacy, Dr. Miriam Mobley Smith, recently was named Pharmacist of the Year by the Illinois Pharmacists Association. We have recently welcomed dignitaries from partner universities in India and China, and we work to strengthen our international presence to provide our students with the kind of global education they will need to compete. CSU Urban Mindfulness and Addictions Research Program This five-year $1.9 million program is funded by a grant from the National Institute of Health. The program, working in conjunction with the Cook County Sheriff's Office, seeks to extend research on mindfulness and mindfulness meditation to underserved urban populations. I would like to close by once again thanking the board members, as well as each and every member of the CSU family, for doing their part to make this a successful year. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Do any of the board members have any questions regarding the President's report? If not, we'll move on to the Academic and Student Affairs. Dr. Henderson.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning.
Trustees, new trustees.
Good morning.
Hello. CSU staff, CSU students, and guests. Today's report is very exciting. It's brief, but it's exciting because it focuses on, as Dr. Watson said, our core mission, our students. But it focuses on the topic, science, technology, engineering, and math, that has become a national trend and is very important for our students to be involved in. Today we will talk about our students' grant tech, our students' grant research, their study abroad activities, and their activities on campus around STEM. And with that said, I will introduce Dean Dave Canis to introduce the team, and they will have some brief remarks about their experiences this summer and this year around CERN, which they will explain, and they also will share with you our new Center for STEM Research that's housed on this campus. Thank you.
Good morning, board members.
Good morning. Good
morning. My name is David Canis. I'm the interim dean of the College of Arts and Sciences. I'd like to introduce Dr. Leroy Jones, who is the executive director of our new Center for Science Education and Research.
Dr. Jones.
You are probably aware, board members, that there is a serious issue in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics across this country. There is a shortage of qualified people for jobs. There is a particular shortage in the area of underserved populations participating. Some statistics. In chemistry, approximately 2,000 PhDs are awarded annually. 20 to 30 of them are awarded to African Americans. The statistics are even lower for physics and mathematics. I think it's safe to say that one of the strengths of Chicago State University since I've been here is the sciences. I happen to be a professor of chemistry, so maybe I am biased, as is Dr. Jones. But we made a decision a year ago to try to take all of these individual efforts that faculty are doing and put them into a center so we can leverage one grant to help get other grants. And today you will hear the results of some of those, particularly our students who went to CERN. We graduate between 60 and 80 undergraduate STEM majors per year. For chemistry, that puts us in the top 15 institutions in the country. We graduate about 20. For physics, we're usually in the top 10 of undergraduate African Americans receiving degrees, BS degrees. A few years ago, we were number one in master's degrees awarded to African Americans in mathematics. Dr. Jones, tell us a little bit about the center's activities and its focus.
Good morning.
Good morning.
As the dean was saying, my name is Leroy Jones. I am a full professor of chemistry in the Department of Chemistry and Physics. Been here since 2000. I'm also the director for STEM initiatives in the College of Arts and Sciences, and also the executive director for the Center for STEM Education and Research. 3 years ago, President Watson and my department afforded me the opportunity to participate in the American Council on Education Fellows Program, which allowed me over the course of the year to visit approximately 24 to 30 what we call STEM centers throughout the United States. The purpose of my visits was to see how these centers connect all the STEM programs, you know, within their business units, but more importantly, just to see how the mission and the vision lines up with the mission and vision, you know, for the center. When I returned to the university, I assembled a team and we wrote a grant to the Department of Education. The grant was funded for $2.4 million to fund the Center for STEM Education and Research. That was in October 2011. We launched it in January of 2012. There were really three goals that we wanted to address to try to enhance the STEM infrastructure here at Chicago State University. The first goal was to increase America's talent pool by improving STEM education for students in grades 6 through 12. Why is this important? If you look at every 100 ninth graders that enter the ninth grade, by the time they graduate with a Bachelor of Science in STEM, it's only 6. So that means 6% of the students that enter STEM, okay, in the ninth grade, only 6 out of 100, only 6 graduate. That's a problem. So some of the objectives that we did to address that was to develop middle school science camps during the summer as well as through the academic year. We did the same thing for high school students, and we also have active Saturday academies. So for example, last summer we had approximately 250 6th through 12th graders on campus engaged in these programs, and right now we have roughly about 120 in Saturday academies. So that was goal one for directly dealing with students 6 to 12. The second was really to motivate our undergraduate students. And we were talking about recruiting, retaining, progressing, that they actually get through our curriculum and graduate our students in STEM. The way that we did that, one of the initial things that we did with funding from the Department of Ed as well as from the Provost's Office and from the Dean's Office was create a STEM resource center that's actually housed over in the Williams Science Center. This center has computers, students can come, they can socialize, we do different events just to motivate the students to persist in STEM. We also provide several meaningful undergraduate research experiences, both internal to the university as well as external. So our students have a bunch of opportunities, and you'll hear about one of those opportunities today. Every year, we host an annual science-focused, STEM-focused conference. It's typically off-campus, and we've actually been doing this for the last 13 years. Last year, we had over 400 students off-campus participating in these conferences. We bring in very highly noted people to come in and talk with them, motivate them, workshop. They have an opportunity to present their research as well as several other opportunities. And then the other part for undergraduates, which has really been very good over the last couple of years, is actually providing international opportunities and experiences for our students. So over the last 4-5 years, we've sent 43 students overseas and a dozen faculty overseas to engage in research experiences. And the results have been phenomenal, and you will see that today. So that's the goal, too. The goal three is to provide meaningful resources and professional development initiatives to boost faculty research and proposal writing productivity. The students cannot do research if they do not have faculty who can help them engage in their research, and you'll also see that on today. So one of the things that we do during our conferences as well as throughout the academic year, we provide different workshops, grant workshops, you know, for our faculty, you know, to help boost their writing, as well as we're there just as a resource for them to do different things. I think one of the key things, and this is one of the things that Dean Candace really wanted me to stress, the power of a center is actually leveraging research funds. No granting institution is in the business of sustaining a program. You know, fortunately, with something like the Illinois LSM program, we've been around for 20 years, but that's something that just doesn't happen any longer. So what the program does is it helps to leverage these grants. So, for example, I was talking about the middle school, the high school. We look at these transition points. Okay, that's leveraged by the Department of Education. You know, when those students come to college, high school to college, okay, we have the LSAMP and another grant called a PBI that helps with that. For those students going from 2-year to 4-year, we have something called the Urban STEP program that specifically deal with those students so they can transition into Chicago State and other 4-year institutions. Once they get here, to get them to grad school, our programs in the LSAMP program, the NOIS program, the NBRS program, deals with those students to get them there. And finally, as they transition to the STEM workforce, which is really what we're really trying to get these students to do, we have programs like the LSAMP Bridge to the Doctorate, programs like the PhysTech program by APS and some of the others. So that's to kind of just give you a snapshot got. And we've been able to do this in about 2 years. And we certainly, look to do more, as we move forward, here at Chicago State University.
Thank you, Dr. Jones. Let's talk about a few of the results from this. For an example, our National Society of Black Engineers pre-college program runs in the summer and in the academic year. They were just named the chapter in the whole country, the national chapter. There's about 800 chapters in the nation. We were just named the top chapter in the country. We'll receive an award for this in March. They also race little NASCARs around that they prepare. We're ranked number one in the country in their NASCAR racing as well. It's kind of interesting. Our students in the last year have gone to Serbia, Switzerland, South Africa, the Caribbean, Ireland, Philippines, and I think some are headed to Kenya, aren't they, in a month or so, Dr. Jones? The Department of Chemistry was given an award by the the American Chemical Society for promoting diversity. The award was, the competition was all universities in the Midwest for promoting diversity in the chemical profession. We received that in 2011. Hundreds and hundreds of students have made professional publications at national, regional, local, and international meetings. And we've received millions of dollars of funding that we hope will continue. We have a $280 million science building planned, and we are going to start raising money soon. And if any of you would like to donate the first few dollars, we'd be happy to accept it. But one of the real significant things that has happened that has gotten us a lot of press is our students we send to CERN. If you don't know what CERN is, you'll hear about it in a minute. It's the most advanced research lab in the world. There are four undergraduate institutions in America that send students to CERN. There are only three minority-serving institutions, I believe, in America that send students to CERN, and they only send their doctoral students. We have four students this summer that went to CERN, I think two the previous summer and two the summer before that. The professors that have worked on this, Dr. Austin Harton and Dr. Edmundo Garcia, you moved down. Oh, there you were, way down there, Dr. Garcia. This is high profile, and we'd really like to have our students tell you a little bit about what they've done. I will say that Dr. Jones helped fund a couple of these people. The two professors here you see helped the funding, and Dr. Watson provided funding for some of this initiative as well. I think I'll have you guys introduce yourself. Bernard, let's start with you.
How you guys doing? My name is Bernard Balson. I am an engineering physics major. I'm a junior. Today I'll be talking about CERN at CSU program. I would like to, our program was funded by, also we was told, by the President's Office, National Science Foundation, LSM, and also the Department of Energy. We have sent 11 students to this program since 2010. That's it. Thank you. Sorry. I don't have a laser point, but in the center of the PowerPoint, you can see the circle. That's the T0 detector. I worked on the program called GEN4. And the squares you see on the outside of that, in the center of the detector, is where I worked on the new development of detectors. We use quorums, and then briefly, just to explain the whole PowerPoint to you, is basically this internship that we was doing overseas, working, actually had to learn C++, Java, computer program. It was a real job. We worked from 9 to 5, and opportunity working on the program, as you see, the shockwaves and detectors. I can't go. I'm sorry.
Hello, my name is Tasha Williams. I was a CERN student. Went to CERN and did research on the T0 detector as well as Bernard, but I used a different program than he did. I used the ZMAX Optimal Design Program. In the simulations, we used an unsegmented quartz, which is the one you see at the top left-hand side, and a segmented. And within the unsegmented quartz, we saw that the total internal reflection within it would just spread the rays out one shot through. And with the segmented one, we saw that it was contained within within that one quartz in a segment, which gave it more intensity. And therefore, it was a better option for the T0 simulation. And that was my job at CERN.
Hello, everybody. My name is Mike Tyler. I'm a physics secondary education major. My role at CERN, as well as the U.S. Department of Energy, was to understand the big picture concepts of strange particles. We did a lot of coding, me and Mr. Rodney Carmona. We went between CERN and Lawrence Livermore National Labs. And we had to really, really break down a lot of data via AliRoute, which is a program that the LHC network uses to harvest information. We utilized that data to analyze lambdas as well as K-shorts. My emphasis was K-short, and Mr. Carmona's was, lambdas. So I just want to make a couple of quick notes. The experience at CERN was tremendous because we were allowed to engage with various physicists, engineers, educators, businessmen. It runs a whole gambit of individuals we were able to discuss science with. And not only in telling that, the U.S. Department of Energy allowed us to speak to some of their top-notch physicists in the nuclear physics or high-energy physics department at the National Lab. So this was a tremendous experience in that aspect because we got to actually see real-life scientists discuss what should be taught to our youth at this level from the big-picture concept of physics and how it can be translated back down to our youth to inspire them in STEM-related fields. And that was all. Thanks.
Hello. My name is Rodney Carmona. My main focus there was data analysis using the AliRoute and coding for C++. Now, where we did most of our work was actually at the ALICE section of CERN, which is one of the five major detectors there in Switzerland. And from the slide, you can actually see us there with the detector. This detector is about 3 to 4 stories tall. And we actually had the opportunity to go in person and see what we were actually working with on the computers. And right here is a slide showing some of the computing portion of it. What we actually did was study the invariant mass of quarks. What that is to be able to identify the amount of mass an object has at any relative speed, which is a very significant thing to do with something such a subatomic level. And this is some of our actual results from our data analysis. So we have a verification plot of our Armitage Polyadinsky plot on the top left, which is verifies that we're actually looking at what we suspect we're looking at. That shows kaons and lambdas. And we have the other three plots from the top right to the bottom two, which show the invariant mass. And once we clean up the signal using coding in the bottom left, it shows only the particles we're looking at. And in the bottom right, what that shows is throughout the different ranges of these particles, based on the amount of energy they possess, we can tell how many particles will come out. And here we have a couple slides from the past years that show the students going to CERN as well.
To understand the importance of this, and Dr. Garcia, tell me if I'm correct on this, but a few years ago, the NSF division, the High Energy Physics Division, was making a presentation to the Senate Appropriations Committee, was it, for the 14 agencies? And they got two slides, if I'm correct. One slide.
Yeah, one of the slides showed the picture that you can see here. our students and
And the other slide was their hundreds of millions of dollars and what they spent it on. I think that tells you something about the significance of this, that it, a federal agency the size of the National Science Foundation and the High Energy Physics Division would do that. So thank you for listening, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Dean Cannons, can you just put things, students, please stay up here. Please stay up there. Can you put things in context? And I may have missed it. You may have said it. CERN is located in what country?
It's actually located in two countries.
Okay.
Switzerland and France, correct, Dr. Garcia?
Yeah. Because last year,
why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
CERN is the European Center of Nuclear Research. It's located in the border of Switzerland and France. Mm-hmm. This is the lab. Half of it is in France and half of it is in Switzerland. It's a multinational collaboration. You see the map here. Actually, the color means all the member states of that work at CERN. And as you can see, it's basically every country in the world.
Excellent.
It's where people smash things together to try to find new particles.
It is the largest in Europe, is that correct?
It's the largest in the world.
Largest in the world.
Yeah, there's nothing like this anywhere else in the world.
And how many universities send students there? I know it's only
In your ALICE project, which is one of the, there's five big projects there, and ALICE is one of the two largest. I believe there are 103 universities, okay. Dr. Garcia?
And we are get some clarity there. A little bit of emphasis on that point in terms of what you have achieved. I'd like to now ask the students some questions. I'd like for each student to state, you know, and I got a couple of lawyers up here, so I hope you don't mind. I'm going to ask their age. But I'm doing it for demographic purposes so that you can understand the demographics of our students, okay? If you don't mind, I'd like for you to tell your age, what your major is, what your academic plans are after you graduate from Chicago State, and then the fourth thing is what your career plans are.
Okay. Rodney Carmona, age is, I'm 25 years old. My major is physics. My academic plans are to get a doctorate in applied physics and be in the military and actually work there in a research lab.
Excellent. Thank you.
My name is Michael Tyler. I am 33 years old. My major is physics secondary teaching option. Currently working already as a STEM robotics instructor at CPS Marsh Elementary. I plan to hopefully transition to the College of Education Masters of Arts and Teaching program. And then, if God willing, I will try to tackle the doctorate in education. My plans is to ultimately change the way students of minority, especially underrepresented locations, under-resourced locations, schools, I mean, to make sure that they're addressed when we're teaching them. So my approach would be to simply change the teaching style and utilize more inquiry-based strategies and bring a lot of high-level physics concepts down to the students, something to get them motivated and keep them motivated.
I also like your CERN formal wear if you have
time. Hi, my name is Bernard Balson. I am an engineering physics major. I'm planning on going to get my doctorate in medical physics or nanotechnology, then with physics base, and I hope to come back to Chicago State be a professor in physics.
And where do you plan on going for your doctorate, sir?
Right now, I haven't made my decision yet, but I have an opportunity for medical physics, more like I'm looking toward Georgia Tech University. Nanotechnology, I'm looking more towards Notre Dame. If not, I might go to Northwestern for physics or Urbana-Champaign.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Hello, my name is Tasha Williams. I'm the old lady of the bunch. I'm 42 years old. Physics, secondary education. My plan is to get additional degrees besides my physics in mathematics as well as chemistry, my two loves besides physics, which also steered me towards physics. And I want to serve the inner city youth. I have 5 grandkids and 3 in CPS. So I really want them to understand what education is needed for. You can't make it through this life with just some half pieces of knowledge that you can't connect. So we need kids to have those connections and move through life more seamlessly than I did. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to thank Bernard, Tasha, Mike, and Rodney because they truly are the future STEM leaders and educators of the world. Thank you very much, Dr. Garcia, Dr. Hart, and Dr. Jones, and Dean Canis for that presentation. I'd like to move towards the resolutions. I have 2 resolutions today for your approval. The first resolution is the Open Access to Research Task Force resolution. I'd like to ask Dean Richard Darga to please join me to present this resolution.
Okay. Good morning. It's Rich Darga, and I was just sitting there hoping I wasn't going to follow those guys right away. Here I am. I've got a resolution, and here we go. And basically, it's in response to Senate Bill 1900. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's an open access bill passed this past August. Basically, it specifies that all state of Illinois public universities must establish a policymaking committee in January 2014 that has until January 2015 to define an open access solution for scholarly research for all state universities. And basically, it means that we need to find a mechanism, create policies and mechanisms to publish in an open access format all work that's being produced at state universities. And so on our committee, we've engaged students, faculty, administration, and what we're doing is, and we also have a non-voting member of the publishing industry because it's a huge potential impact on the publishing industry, and we're working in collaboration with other state universities intensively so that we can be in step with what everyone else is doing, but to create these policies and then to move forward with a solution for open access, which means free and open access to information in 2015. Did you want me to read the resolution? Or?
No, you don't need to.
I don't need to read it? Any questions? Told you it wasn't too exciting. The task force, we wanted to ensure that, you know, as the dean of the library and instruction, it was critical that we selected individuals engaged in research. We wanted representation as much as possible from all the various colleges, student input, both at the undergrad and graduate level, and and we actually asked the union to submit a representative as well on the task force. So we're just asking that the task force be engaged.
Okay. Any questions or comments from the trustees?
No,
do I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
I second the motion.
Trustee Lake. Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zolar?
Yes.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Reyna?
Yes.
We have a second item.
Yes, sir. Our next item is a resolution. It will be presented by Dr. Yvonne Harris, Associate Vice President of Sponsored Programs, and joining us is Dr. Atelli, Chairman of the Mathematics Department, who is the PI of this grant.
Good morning, Chairman. And trustees, we have a very exciting opportunity with this grant that I'm asking for the board to allow us to administer. This grant is really focused on addressing some of the financial needs in underserved and underrepresented communities. This is exciting because the Department of Education had really put this forward, and this is the first of its kind for the Department of Education. They only awarded four nationally, and Chicago State University was one of them. And this is a project and a model that focuses on areas of retirement security and financial literacy. What makes this program very unique is that the two phase, first phase is research, second phase is intervention, will be led by graduate students under the guidance of knowledgeable faculty that we have that work in the areas of economics and mathematics. So in order to accept and administer this very exciting opportunity, we are asking for the board to accept our resolution for $556,030 over 5 years.
Any questions? I move that we approve the grant. Is there a second?
Second.
Trustee Leak? Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zolar?
Yes.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Reyna?
Yes.
Thank you.
That concludes my action items.
We have a report from Enrollment Management and Student Affairs.
Good morning, Chairman and Trustees. My name is Latrice Eggleston. I'm the Interim Director for Institutional Effectiveness and Research, and I'm coming with a report for Vice President LaShondra Peoples. Unfortunately, her flight is delayed in DC, so she's still in the airport. Just to give you a few things, I'm gonna talk about the spring enrollment, the registration update, where our numbers are, our outreach efforts, where we are on retention and graduation, and giving you information about the new marketing campaign and collateral. The spring 2014 application are up. We have actually 63% more applications for this spring term, and so we are still in the process of completing the processing the additional load of applications that we have this spring. So we're anticipating a higher enrollment than the previous spring term. In terms of our current registration, up to date, we have our applications are up, our new admins are up too, and they're actually in terms of registering to this date as of yesterday, our students who are new admits, we have a higher number, about 7% of those students are actually registered for the spring term. So we're moving along in terms of getting our students registered and getting more applications in for the spring term so that we can ensure that we are increasing our enrollment, which is one of our goals for enrollment management. In addition, you heard from the president about our outreach efforts. We are continuing to do more outreach. We're continuing to do our open houses, as well as we're reaching out to more of our Catholic and parochial schools, our suburban and west suburban schools. We're doing more outreach in the neighboring states, such as Michigan, Iowa, and Indiana. And to that degree, our retention efforts for our cohort is up. We are up about 7% in our retention rate. In addition, our graduation rate remains steady at 21%. We are collaborating with our colleges, the deans, and the chairmen regarding doing more recruitment efforts that are collaborative with them, using them to help them to recruit more students into the various programs. To that end, you have before you a marketing and communications dashboard, which gives you some of the highlights about what the marketing team is doing in terms of trying to do more outreach and get information out about Chicago State and the opportunities here. What I do want to direct you to is the collateral for recruitment. There's new collateral materials that we are using, and again, we're working with the college deans and the chairman in the colleges to develop these marketing collateral tools so that we can bring more students here at CSU. And that is the update for enrollment management. If you have any questions, I can entertain the ones I can't answer.
Yeah, I have a question or two. What is the size of the student body at this time?
We are at 5,701 students.
And you say you expect us to have more students in the spring?
Correct.
And
we're hoping to have at least between, we're hoping to have a 1% increase in our student enrollment currently that we had last spring, in the spring term. And usually that enrollment averages about between 5,700 to 6,000 students or more.
So it
depends on each term.
So we'll have more students in the spring than we had this current semester.
We're hoping that we are going to have more students, yes, in the spring than the current semester.
Have you started the work for September already?
We are starting the work for September already. The applications for the fall term are up. Our director of admissions is here. Matt, if you would join me. He can probably give you more detail about what the fall term applications look like.
Good morning, all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
To address that question, just a few points. And as always, there are asterisks in there. While our application numbers for the spring are up quite a bit, also demonstrating progress in both the admitted student pool and those that are committing to attend the institution in the spring, we've aligned our admission timelines a bit more with what you'd see at most other four-year universities. So we've opened our application process up to early decision students. Thank you, Doctor. We've opened our application process up to essentially early admission decision students. Generally speaking, those students are making decisions and applying to schools by December 1st. CSU's history had borne that the application for the fall, upcoming fall term, generally wouldn't open until much later than that. So we had a line this year. The issue is that the application software automatically defaults to the spring term. So we see some false positives in those spring numbers. Many freshman students who we know are actually applying for next fall have applied for the spring. We work to communicate and then move those students out of their spring application to their intended fall application. That's just a bit of a note on the spring pool. Beyond that, the fall application numbers already, partially because of the earlier application window, partially, and thanks to much of the work of this group and governmental affairs, our opportunity to leverage and offer scholarships has really changed the way that we're able to engage students in schools. It is an expected aspect of college admission and recruitment these days, and something that CSU has not been able to offer. Even in the short amount of time that we were able to do so for this past fall, through this spring and into next fall, the response that we have, both in students' interest as well as their commitment to the institution, has been overwhelming.
So if I'm correct, we're offering more scholarships opportunities than we have before?
Indeed. We have a pool of money reserved for a host of recruitment and retention issues, but in the past, the colleges have had individual and small foundation-based scholarships limited to fewer than $50,000 per year. We have a pool of accessible money at this point in time where, for this past fall alone, we offered in the range of $300,000. So the amount of money that we have accessible to us, of course, that assumes over-awarding and a certain number of students who accept, has grown tremendously.
So where did the new money come from?
I believe Dr. Watson spoke to some of the new money and funds that were given as a gift from former Senator, Senate President Emile Jones.
So will we expect, or can we expect, to maintain that same level of scholarships, even though the money from Senator Jones was a one-time thing?
We are working to look at other areas where we can garner more funds for students in terms of scholarships to attend CSU. So that is the plan, to look for more funding. In addition, VP Peoples did mention to me that she wanted to relay to the Board of Trustees that she is committed to ensuring that we will have an increase in enrollment, and she will be working with the enrollment management team over the holiday break to continue to process applications so that we are on point for the spring enrollment numbers.
Now, the graduation number you gave us is 21%. Is that for the graduation that's going to take place next week?
No. So the graduation, there's a difference between a graduation rate and then the number of students who will be graduating. For the past 3 years, actually, the university has graduated over 1,000 students, which is a high number in previous years. This upcoming term, I believe the number of students that will be graduating is over 500 students this fall term, who are expected to graduate this fall term. Yes, I'm sorry, my statistics earlier were regarding the number of students that we graduate within an academic year.
And you've heard us make reference to this before. The graduation rate is based upon just a small group of students. Those are the full-time freshman cohort that enter each year. The overall graduation represents, of course, students who came in a part-time capacity or transferred into the institution. And those students are never reflected in the graduation rate, unfortunately.
Well, unfortunately, but that's the metric that that everything is measured on, basically, isn't it? The first-time, full-time freshman?
Yes, it is, but we're moving to make some changes, and I believe the Department of Education knows now that we also need to include transfer rates, because they are the majority of students who are now matriculating into higher education. So it's no longer just that traditional student. More non-traditional students are attending college.
I have a question. If you incorporated those other students, what would the graduation rate reflect? If you were to if you incorporated those other numbers, the transfer students altogether, what would the graduation rate be then?
If you incorporated, and actually I hate to mix apples with oranges, but our transfer graduation rate is usually around 40% or higher, and it just depends on the specific year. Last year rate was nearly 40%. We're expecting this year's rate to be slightly higher.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. If I may, it didn't take the Board of Trustees or President Watson or the financial people in the administration very long to find out that our newest trustee, Trustee Zolar, had a certain financial acumen that is really an asset to the board and the university. And recognizing her financial expertise, Trustee Curtin, to his credit, stepped down from being chairman of finance and audit so Trustee Zolar could assume that role. And at today's meeting, I'm formally appointing her as chairman of finance and audit, even though she's been acting in that capacity almost since the day she came on board. Trustee Zolar, you have a report for us?
Thank you, sir. First, I'd just like to congratulate the university and those students who have participated in the CERN program. Outstanding, very outstanding. So thank you for that. Secondly, I'd like to say that I'm extremely pleased and honored to be a part of Chicago State University, the family, as I'm going to call it. I have, as an undergraduate, taken classes here myself. My children have all taken classes here. I actually taught a class here many long years ago. So it's like coming home. I am a Southside resident, and I find that CSU is not only a jewel of the Southside, but of the entire city of Chicago. So I'm extremely pleased to be a part of this institution. And as we move forward, I am really looking forward to digging in. So as a new board member, I have had the opportunity, Mr. Chairman, to meet with many of the department heads and our staff who are responsible for bringing us vital information. In that regard, I'm going to ask Larry Pinkleton to step up and give us a report that he has shared with me before we came to the meeting. I think that things are, I don't want to say they're rosy, but I think that things are really moving forward as we address the outstanding audit and compliance issues, and as we will be putting budgets together moving forward. Mr. Pinkleton.
Thank you, Trustee Zolar, Mr. Chairman, distinguished members of the Board of Trustees, Mr. President. And just I want to augment the last presentation in one way. There was discussion around the primary contributor to the university having scholarship dollars available to award. We did, in our fiscal year 14 budget, did receive a fairly substantial commitment from the state of Illinois that has been instrumental in helping to drive the award of scholarships. So I just wanted to add that to the presentation. Okay, I have a couple of quick comments. The first thing I'd like to do is to review the university's cash position. If I could draw your attention to either screen, which is convenient for you to scan very quickly. The university's net cash in bank is approximately $15 million. We have several funds that contribute to what's referred to as our restricted cash, which is a function of specific projects that have been earmarked from the Capital Development Board and the funding that is intended to support those projects. If we net out those restricted cash figures, we end up with an unrestricted cash position of approximately $9.5 million. Looking at the short-term projection over the next 90 days around our projected collections, we anticipate approximately $51 million in collections coming to the university. Also, in that same 90-day period, we anticipate approximately $43.1 million of expenditures, leaving us a net position of $17.4 million. If we were to, quite frankly, experience a hiccup from the state over that same 90-day period and were not to receive any of the state funds that we anticipate as a result of our fiscal year 14 appropriation, we would end up with a balance of $5.4 million. And so it's still a positive number. Looking at the university's cash position right now, I would characterize it as good or solid. A brief overview of the state appropriation on a more aggregate level. Our fiscal year appropriation is approximately $42.2 million. And looking at the payments that have been received through the month of November, we've received approximately $5.6 million, which translates into 13% of our fiscal year 14 budget. This would suggest the remaining balance or the difference of approximately $36.5 million is still due to CSU in months ahead. In terms of what we've actually billed to the state, again, there's generally a lag time between what we voucher the state and what the actual checks that they cut us, if you will. We billed approximately $10.9 million of our fiscal year 14 appropriation, which translates to 26%. Are there any questions on the university's cash position at this time?
I get confused sometimes in terms of when you talk about the fiscal year, what year we're actually talking about. I guess my specific question is that $42 million appropriation, is that for the time frame that we're in presently, or is that what for the next time frame that I guess begins July 1st or August 1st?
The $42 million figure is our fiscal year 14 appropriation, which began July 1st this past summer. So the university's fiscal year is July 1st to June 30th. So July 1st of 2013 to June 30th of 2014 is our fiscal year time period. And this dollar reflects the appropriation that the state has made during that 12-month period.
And so for the fiscal year that begins July 1, that appropriation won't be made until this May, is that?
That is correct. That's correct.
Okay. We've talked a lot over the last year about when the pension bill passes. Now that it's passed, when do you expect that to actually affect us?
I believe the current anticipated timing for the impact of the pension bill is in our fiscal year 15 appropriation. Pulling from memory here, we anticipate a 0.5% impact to the university, which should translate into about $400,000 to our cash flow in that first year of implementation. Subsequent to that, there'll be a 0.5% increment in the out years, growing to I believe a high of 12% over the course of time. So the state is basically phasing in the impact of the pension reform.
How are we going to address that loss of income?
Well, that will require the university to, sit in a room and get some real creative thinking going on amongst the leadership, okay? It's an additional expense to the university, and so we will be able to, evaluate our operational improvement opportunities, which might dent into that number in some form or fashion, in addition to the expectation that revenue from student enrollment, i.e. tuition, would grow over time. So those two positive forces hopefully will allow us to, embrace that additional expense over the course of time. Other questions on the cash report? Okay, I'm going to ask Mr. Raul Garcia to join me briefly. Mr. Raul Garcia is the university's executive director and controller. He is going to give you a brief overview of the fiscal year 13 actual results.
Good morning, Chairman, members of the Board of Trustees. My name is Raul Garcia. I'm your Executive Director and Controller of Business and Finance here at CSU. I want to first thank every one of you for giving me the opportunity to really work for this fine institution. As Mr. Pinkleton mentioned, I'm going to be going over certain items relating to the 630 audited financial statements. So in your package, you should have some financial statements. And we will start with the statement of revenue and expenses and changes in net position. I don't think we have a view there, but it should look like something like this, excluding my notes and comments. So the first section is operating revenue. For the period ending June 30th, 2013, our total operating revenues resulted in a $56.1 million, which is a decline of $2.2 million relative to prior fiscal year. Two major contributors to this decline is specifically in other operating revenues. During fiscal year 2013, UPS was wanting to curtail their own operating expenses. That meant eliminating a work program that benefits our students. However, CSU and the foundation worked together rapidly to come up with a viable solution whereby we were able to identify some cost-cutting opportunities and pass those costs on to UPS. As a result of that, we were able to retain the program, however, under the management of the foundation. At the same time, this program is going to benefit our students because it's really a work program that allows our students an alternative to funding their education expenses. A second major factor is is student tuition and fees. That declined about $787,000 relative to the prior fiscal year. That's mainly driven by the decline in student enrollment. It is no surprise. I think Dun and Bradstreet just recently issued some information, a report, that talked about this being an issue not only with this institution, but also other institutions throughout the nation. So, and unfortunately, the cost of that report is cost prohibited. So the bits and pieces that I gathered out of the internet was mainly that a lot of the organizations are rethinking how they do business and revamping their enrollment process. So there's no surprise there. Let's move on to operating expenses, which is the next section. At the end of the day, we ended up at $155.3 million in operating expenses, which is a $15.7 million increase from the prior fiscal year. Now, please do not have a heart attack. There's a viable explanation for this. The biggest jump was in our pension expense, the on-behalf state fringe benefits. This is a non-cash transaction, which means this is a cost that is managed by the state, and because of the reporting rules, CSU is required to report this expense in our financial statements as it relates to those costs associated with our employees. The next item that had an impact in our expenses is student services. We ended up at $9.5 million, a total jump of $1.8 million. And that's mainly driven because of our recently enrollment in the Western Athletics Conference that we just see recently enrolled in. Because of that involvement, we've seen our enrollment fee go up slightly a little bit, but in addition to that, our students are now competing in more schools, in more programs, so that's driven up the cost a little bit for us. So close to the $1.9 million jump that we've seen in that line item. The next largest jump that we've seen is in institutional support. We ended up at $14.2 million, up $1.7 million. That's mainly driven, it's a combination of salary increases, but also some new initiatives that we've done this fiscal year. Mainly, we went through a faculty tenure retention criteria assessment where we revisited how, and I think the provost can provide additional information on that, but how we recruit and retain faculty members. That added a cost of about $272,000. Again, I think that's important for us to highlight because there's a main focus on our attention to delivering quality education to our students. And then the next big jump in that same line item is we also made various investments in terms of computers were replaced throughout the university. That includes changes in computers with our library, student computer labs, instructional classrooms, and areas of student support. So that added about another $330,000 in costs. Now, I will ask you to take a look at the financial statements. The net operating loss is $99.1 million at the end of the day, which hopefully you're probably asking the question, hey, what's going on? Where's the other source of funding? There is a strong dependency in other source of funding, specifically in the next line item, state appropriations and federal grants and awards. So for state appropriations, we ended up at $37 million, which is a decline in $2.4 million, down from $39.4 from 2012. Again, this is a decline in funding from the state. As you probably already know, the state is having issues with balancing their budget, and we're starting to see that trickle-down effect to our agency. The next big item is federal non-operating grants. We ended up at $13.6 million in revenue dollars, a drop of $4.1 million from last year. That's mainly driven, again, by the decline in enrollment. Obviously, the more students we have, there's a strong dependency on our students on financial aid, so there's a direct correlation as enrollment declines, so will financial aid revenue as well. Then the last piece is capital appropriations. We end up at $1.9 million, down $1.3 million relative to the prior fiscal year. That's mainly driven by capital projects that were completed during the fiscal year, previous fiscal year, that are no longer existent this year. The state did provide some funding for some of those projects. And Larry, I don't know if you have a list of those projects. I think one of those was the baseball field, and then there's also the pharmacy, the revamping of our pharmacy classrooms. All right. So that's the piece on operating revenues and expenses. Any questions so far? Okay. All right. Let's move on to the balance sheet. On the balance sheet, our overall assets decreased by $5.8 million. That's mainly driven by the decline in cash of $7.3 million. A big piece of it was really to fund our operating costs. I think we just went over it in the revenue and expenses, offset by the increase of $1.9 million in capital assets. For the fiscal year 2013, we ended up investing approximately $8 million in capital infrastructure, the baseball fields, some remodeling, the repair of the 95th Street entrance, offset by depreciation expense of about $7 million. Moving on to the liabilities. Liabilities, we ended up at $7 million, a decline of $1.7 million. Or actually an increase of $1.7 million, excuse me. That's driven by the capital investments that were made at year-end over the summer. We did incur these services on or about June 30th, which required us to accrue for some of those expenses, and so those payouts would have occurred in the new fiscal year in July and August. So that's driving up our liability to go up slightly above than normal. Last but not least, I would say bonds payable declined by $1 million, and that's mainly driven as a result of the annual bond principal payment of $1 million. Members of the board, that's all I have to add to discuss in relation to the audited financial statements. Do all want to open it up for any questions, and I also want to thank my colleagues, Larry Pinkleton, as well as the president and members of the board for another successful year-end close at CSU.
Thank you, Raul. Just some additional context to clarify the university's change in net assets. Did want to, this will be an excellent transition for me as well. During the fiscal year 13 time period, beyond the appropriated dollars and revenue dollars that the university had at their disposal to conduct the business, we did utilize our cash reserves to fund several initiatives. And so that is really the primary, the root cause, if you will, behind the change in the net assets going down over that same period of time. Since that has taken place, the university has gone through some internal discussions amongst the management team to get a better handle
around the utilization of these cash reserves and make decisions on the specific provisions that we would like to have in place going into the fiscal year 14 and beyond planning period that would recognize what was initially thought of as temporary purchases, but initiatives that we want to make permanent provision for. And so the efforts to identify those expenses, again, that were a part of our fiscal year 13 spend are ongoing. To date, we have identified a total of $5.8 million of expense that we want to make permanent provision for. And at this point in time, we have identified all but $800,000 of expense in terms of our permanent funding that will be that will allow us to transition those items that the university has deemed important enough to make permanent funding provision for. So again, as we stand here today, going into the fiscal year 15 planning cycle, and we still have obviously 6 months left in this year, and the work continues to identify opportunities to fund that $800,000. But at this stage of the game, we are, I think, positioned very well going into the fiscal year 15 planning cycle. I just wanted to clarify that. And again, in terms of this is all relating to the university change in net assets and as of fiscal year 13's close. Okay. Thank you, Raul. Beyond that, in terms of the where we stand with the fiscal year 15 planning cycle, that process has in fact began. We are engaged in discussions with leadership across the campus to capture their fiscal year 15 inputs. Process-wise, this is the month of December. We're pushing through the university's university budget review cycle, which will culminate in recommendations to the president on or around the March time period. From there, we will be finalizing our request going into the fiscal year 15 planning cycle to the state, and then that will form the basis of our ask, if you will, for fiscal years 15 state appropriation. Are there any questions concerning the university's fiscal year budget position this year or a status update on the fiscal year 15 planning cycle? Okay, moving on. Lastly, I wanted to give a brief update on where we stand with the fiscal year 13 audit. This is the month of December. We anticipate that the external auditors will be leaving the campus during this month. They certainly have the opportunity to engage the university's leadership with any follow-up questions that they have concerning issues or items that they are continuing to analyze, but we expect them to be off the physical site this month. From there, the university will be engaged with the external auditors and their leadership to try to see whether there's any opportunities that we have that can be discussed around consolidation or potential elimination of the potential audit findings that have been presented to date. At this point, it would be inappropriate to volunteer any specific numbers, but I can tell you that is our internal expectation that we will show good, solid improvement coming out of the fiscal year 13 audit relative to fiscal year 12's final results. Any questions concerning my comments on the audit update? Okay, seeing none, that concludes the report from Financial Affairs. Thank you.